Thank you, everybody, for coming this morning. As you can see over here, this is a project that was done by a lot of ARS scientists from different locations throughout the country. And this group, we call ourselves the Agricultural Antibiotic Resistant Group. So the group contributed about 3,000 isolates of generic E. coli, and this from California to South Carolina. And the main source of the isolates were mainly from beef, dairy, swine, poultry, fish, and all the way to surface water. So what we did here was to actually get a feel of the kind of E. coli isolate that we have from different animal sources and from different parts of the country. I put this slide in here because we all know who this guy is, Sir Alexander Fleming, for what he did with the antibiotics, and his work extended with these three other guys, Fleming, Frawley, and Chen. And I put him here because when I was researching through this being a baseball season, and everybody that plays baseball, what they hope to do is to go into the Baseball Hall of Fame. You see this guy here? They belong to the Antibiotic Hall of Fame. So they actually did a lot of work to contribute to human being and to the quality of life for people throughout the world, and their work is still going on today. And I hope some of you that are here, or most of you that are here, will be members of this Antibiotic Hall of Fame, because I know that you guys don't play basketball or baseball to go into the Hall of Fame. But what we're looking at here is antibiotics. There are about five types of antibiotics here. So the first one that we're going to look at is the beta-lactam antibiotics. And the beta-lactam antibiotics, what you see there is the penicillin. That is where Alexander Fleming started his work, with the penicillin nanotum, the cephalosporin, and the other bacterium beta-lactam antibiotics. And mainly what you had in the ESBL, mainly cetirizine, ceftazidime, and maybe a few other antibiotics. These are being classified as the ESBL, and there are many third generation cephalosporin. So those are the ones that we'll be interested in looking at. And when you read through this, you can see a lot of clinical implications of resistance to ESBL, which I'm not really going to go into that. But what we're going to focus a little bit on is why are we looking at these different animal sources? Because that is our concern at the moment. Why are we studying the different animal sources? And as the previous two speakers have already mentioned, that you can see that the extended use of antibiotics in animal agriculture is thought to have created selection pressure for resistant organisms and made farm an important source of antibiotic resistant bacteria and antibiotic resistant genes. So if we go through this, you can see the story why we're looking at manure, because this may be the main source or reservoir of antibiotics and antibiotic resistant genes. And one of the things, when I was just going through the literature, and I found out this publication from FDA, where they actually classify the kind of antibiotics that are sold for human use and those that are sold for animal use. And you can see here the penicillin, the cephalosporin, sulfonamides, and many. Most of them are sold for human use, and when you get over here, the tetracycline, many sold for animal use, or the higher percentage are sold for animal use. I have to bring in this slide because Wei Zeng has actually inch a little bit into it when he was talking about it. This is something like this is a paper that was published in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences by Van Berkel et al. In 2015. There are four panels here, panel A, B, C, and D, talking about largest five consumers of antimicrobials in livestock. When you put in all this antimicrobial in livestock, they go into the manure and they end up somehow in the environment. Panel A, China, USA, Brazil, Germany, India. Panel B, largest five consumers of antimicrobial in livestock, projected within in about 2030. The same people, China, USA, Brazil, India, then Mexico, Germany is not part of that. Then the next group is the largest increase in antimicrobial consumption. Then the case comes again is China, Brazil, India, USA, and Indonesia. But my issue or concern or what we should be looking at is panel D, which says the largest relative increase in antimicrobial consumption in 2020 to 2030. So these are the people that the newcomers that will be coming in into this. But this is what Van Berkel said, that this new group that you see in the previous slide, will be mainly due to this rise is likely due to be driven by growth in consumers' demand and livestock production in the middle income countries and a shift to large scale farms where antimicrobials are used. In some of these developing countries and some of these new countries that are coming in, people get money. They like to improve their lifestyle. They like to eat more meat. And the farmers would like to shift into large-scale production, resulting in more use of antimicrobial. So when you look at this, the story goes on. I just bring in this slide because antimicrobial resistance has been going on for many years, even penicillin before it came into market in 1943. Resistance was already detected in 1940. The third generation cephalosporin came into market in 1985 and resistance was detected in 1987. You see how this thing moved extremely fast. And when you look at some of the countries, I'm still looking at the cephalosporin, the third generation antibiotics that we're looking at here. Look at some of the countries that have picked up resistance in a very high number. And when you follow this map, you see other countries. Please go to this group here, CDDEP. They have a lot of information that are writing about some of this and global use of antimicrobial, because the information there is extremely rich if you want to look at some of the global use, some of the global effects of antimicrobial throughout the world. So what we did here in our study was to take this 300 antimicrobial, these 300 isolates, and use the Clement phylogroup method. And from there, we were able to look at the group, and we have group A and group B1 at the highest level. So the next thing that we did with this group was to do the susceptibility test. And you see some of the compounds that were most that developed the highest level of resistance using about 18 antimicrobial were state recycling, and all the way to MPC Lane at different groups, and you can see some other groups that did not see a very high level of resistance. Then the next thing that we did was to look at the follow-up for the ESBL by doing a PCR, some PCR work, looking at the CTX group 1 and 2, SHD, TM, and the other group. And the result from there was that, I'm just going to point this out, that isolates from swine and dairy showed the highest concentration of extended spectrum beta-lactamase E. coli. These two groups, they are isolates from swine and from dairy. And from here, we move on to do the phenotyping using the Müller-Hinton auger. And what we have from phenotyping was, out of the 300 isolates, we had 9 isolates that were phenotypically confirmed as ESBL. And out of these 9, 7 were from swine and 2 from dairy. And most of these were multi-drug resistant. Some of them were resistant all the way to 12 antibiotics. And the next thing that we're moving forward is doing some additional whole genome sequencing with the whole genome mitral local sequencing and a whole genome SNP. And we're going to do that with about 20 isolates that we're going to look at more in detail. So what we have here in our conclusion is that the 9 isolates confirmed as ESBL E. coli after PCR screening and further confirmation by double synergy test, and also that the ESBL E. coli may be more abundant in swine and dairy manure than you may have from other animal sources. And those are some of the things that we're going to explore as we keep on progressing in this study. Thank you very much.
Were all the swine isolates from different sites, or was there some replication, say, isolates from one site?
They were all from one of your... No, they're all from South Carolina.
Okay.
All the swines were from South Carolina. I was kind of surprised that why are all the swines with ESBL from with this isolate from South Carolina? Yes, they were likely from separate. They were from separate farms. I don't know where that guy collected all those isolates from South Carolina, but I just thought that they all belong to him.
Okay.